I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Division to order. And we do have a forum. And would someone take a look at the February 16th minutes? Representative Nelson, did you move the February 16th minutes?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move the minutes of February 16th.
Any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor of approving the minutes of February 16th, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The minutes are approved. Today we're going to have basically an overview of the governor's supplemental budget. We don't we aren't voting on this bill because it'll come back to us, but we should take a look at it because it does make some changes, again, in the general fund monies that we deal with and some of the other monies. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Peterson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Scott Peterson with MnDOT, and appreciate the committee's time this afternoon. And with the committee's indulgence, I'll just run through the governor's supplemental budget recommendations from the sheet that was issued when the governor made his recommendation. So I think you all have copies of those pages. It covers portions of two pages. And on page, what's marked 35 of 65, about halfway down, Transportation Department supplemental. And I'll just go through them in order. And luckily, we have a couple of items where we were actually able to request additional spending, and the governor was kind enough to recommend those as well. The first one for state road construction, the 2010 appropriation by the federal government for highway projects basically was about $80 million above our previous forecast. And that is the basis on which this increase in spending was requested. We have a plan for spending that money. Roughly $70 million of that will be spent on trunk highway projects, $10 million on local road projects. We get to $104 million increase in spending for the trunk highway fund because we're also planning to use $34 million of what's called advanced construction financing to help us finance the project on the interchange at 169 and 494. And so that's how we get to $104 million. So we need $104 million increase in our spending, in our construction appropriation to achieve that.
Representative Beard has a question.
Mr. Peterson, I'm sorry, did I hear you say the magic words 169 and 494 just a moment ago?
That's what I heard.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Peterson.
Representative Beard, yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Woohoo.
Okay. The way I understand it, we are on the verge of having a complete financing plan for that project. I don't know the timing of it, but this appropriation is for 2011, so that should give us some.
Well, Mr. Chair, that just made this whole week worthwhile, just hearing those few words. Thank you, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Peterson, isn't that under construction now?
Mr. Chairman, no, that's not. You may remember that was one of the projects that we originally tried to finance with the stimulus funds that we received last February. And we weren't able to get approval for a revised or what we're calling a performance-based design for that interchange, so we weren't able to use that. And then we submitted that project as a Tiger Grant application, and it also didn't get funded there. But we've been talking about it actively for about a year now, trying to get it done, and hopefully this will allow us to do that.
Mr. Chair, it's the other end of 169 and Highway 81 on the north end that they're working on.
That's right. I remember that one. That's finished, though, isn't it?
No, that's got a couple more years to go.
The second one is a federal emergency relief account, and we have a companion policy initiative for this as well, and what it amounts to is we'd like to establish at the department in the Trunk Highway Fund an emergency budget so that whenever one of our districts responds to an emergency or a natural disaster, say a flood or a tornado, they expend money to try and either mitigate the impact or recover from these events, and they use their own operating budget. And then for eligible expenses, we then apply to the FHWA for emergency relief funds. And that process of getting reimbursed for those expenditures often takes several years to be completed before we can get those receipts and put them back in the trunk highway fund. So what we'd like to do is establish a $5 million fund so that whenever there's one of these natural disasters, the districts can spend money out of this account, and then when we get reimbursed from FHWA, we will put the money back into this account, so it will be a revolving account for that purpose for the indefinite future. The next few recommendations are of the more unpleasant kind, where we're asking for reductions in order to help accommodate closing the general fund gap that you're all too familiar with. The first one is a recommendation to reduce our funding for Greater Minnesota Transit grants. And you can see we're asking to reduce that appropriation by $462,000 in 2010 and $345,000 in 2011, and then $546,000 in the out years. And for those of you who are paying close attention to these things, you may recall that in the November forecast, we actually projected an increase in the MBEST funds for Greater Minnesota Transit, and those funds will more than offset these proposed reductions. So the good news is there is some ability to maintain existing levels of services with identifiable resources, and hopefully that will hold in the upcoming February forecast as well. Obviously, we're reluctant to recommend this recommendation, but this is the Greater Minnesota Transit grants are the largest source of general funds, or the largest use of general funds at the Department of Transportation. On the next page, the miscellaneous fund transfers. The department has several special revenue funds that it gets dedicated receipts into and spends money out of. And those, there are three of those special revenue funds that we are recommending be reduced. They all have existing balances, and so this will reduce existing balances. One is the county partnership blanket account. The department has authority to enter into agreements with counties in order to perform certain services with them. And we have those with several counties, the majority of counties, in fact, and some of the services that we provide under those partnership agreements are things like materials testing. So if a county has a road project and they're out there, or maybe we're out there taking samples of the bituminous and send it into the lab at the district or at a materials lab and test it to make sure it meets spec, and then we do that for the counties, and then we bill them for that, and then those receipts go into these special revenue funds and support the cost of the activities that we're providing.
Mr. Peterson, on that account, there's not a fund established. That's basically a revenue account, isn't it, from billing back?
Mr. Chairman, it's what they call a special revenue fund. So
but, I mean, you don't maintain a balance. You don't have a budget. It's just what comes in if you do the work and you're billing for it.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. However, that fund has built up a bit of a balance, and I don't have that information with me, but there is a balance there, and so this is taking a part of the balance that exists in the fund today, in that particular fund.
Mr. Peterson, did that always go back to the general fund or into MnDOT?
Mr. Chairman, typically the money in these special revenue funds we have statutory spending authority, so they go into these special revenue funds, and then the district or the office that incurs the expense usually then has the opportunity to spend these funds in order to, again, to cover the cost of the work that we're doing for the counties.
Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Peterson, maybe you're going to dive into this, but I really want you to walk me through the transfer out of the airport fund.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Reinert, I'll get to that in just a second. If that's right. I just want to cover the other two funds that are covered under this, the special revenue line here. The other is a damage restitution account, and that works much the same way as the county partnership account, except the revenue that goes into this fund is generated by motorists who may do some damage to our system out there, either hit a light pole or a guardrail, and we go out and repair that, and if we know who caused the damage, then we bill them for the repair costs, and then their payments go into this fund, again, to cover the cost of the damage that they do.
Mr. Peterson, I have a couple. Is that a follow-up on this, Representative Morrow, or we've got Representative...
Just before we get to the airports, it's about the Mercy Fund, so you're about to touch on it.
I'm about to touch on that, yes. And the third one is the Mercy account, or the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement account, and that Again, we make loans to short line regional railroads and shippers out of the Mercy account, and this revenue constitutes repayments of those loans.
Representative Morrill, you had on this account before. Have you got a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pearson, could you say a little bit more? Because, as you said, this is a revolving loan account, so will the net effect be that there's less money available in the Mercy account for future loans? And can you tell us the amount of money that's actually being transferred out of the Mercy fund?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, this will reduce the amount that's available for loans to eligible recipients, but I don't know that the decision's been made about how much will come out of this particular account yet. If so, I don't have that information available.
And Representative Rainer, as soon as he gets to the airports, we'll get to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have a question.
Did you have on this one, Representative Beard?
This one on the Mercy Fund. First of all, Mr. Peterson, where are you in your presentation? We're trying to follow along.
Oh, I'm at the top of the page. That's marked 36 or 65.
Are you on 36 or 35?
Yeah. miscellaneous fund transfers. I just finished the special revenue. There's a general fund transfer in, a special revenue expenditure reduction.
Okay. Well, I don't see Mercy Fund listed there, but that must be one of them.
That's one of the special revenue funds that's covered and under
on,
that.
On the Mercy Fund, don't we replenish those or plunge that fund with a bond proceed?
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, that's correct. Yep.
Well, that gives rise to a question. If we're using bond proceeds to build the fund, how then can we sweep money out of it and put it into operations in the general fund?
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I'm not exactly sure on all the legal restrictions on how bond funds or bond repayment. Let me just say, my understanding is that these are loan repayments, mm-hmm. that the original loan, the source of the funds was the general obligation bonds. After the loans get repaid, they lose that identity, is my understanding. And so they can, and the debt service is made, payments are made from the general fund. So, you know, I guess on that basis, it seems reasonable that the debt repayment, the loan repayments that MnDOT receives could go back to the general fund.
Mr. Peterson, Mr. Burris could comment on that.
Okay. Or
it's like the money's been laundered by running it through a railroad somewhere, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, my recollection is that while the majority of the funding for the Mercy program comes from bond funds, there have been some general fund dollars also that have gone into the program.
Okay. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Peterson. I apologize for regressing, but I want to go back just for a moment to the non-metro transit grant reduction program here we got going on. And just in light of some contacts that I've had by my local non-metro transit people, I think 2 years ago we had a veterans bill that basically said veterans who had a certified card could ride on the transit for free. There was a reimbursement that took place the next year to metro transit of about, I think it was about $2.1 million to cover some of the costs of that. However, outstate non-metro did not receive any of that. In fact, they sent me some information saying that that really took about $265,000, I think, was their annual operating expense increase because of that provision. So I'm just wondering, in terms of, I don't see any metro transit reductions here. Non-metro was already behind the eight ball when metro had received some additional funds, and now we're taking it out of the non-metro, and I'm not seeing a commensurate reduction in the metro transit. So I guess I'm kind of... Maybe I'm behind on that one. I am behind on that one. 1.2.
Mr. Peterson.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Severson, I think the Metropolitan Council will cover that
okay.
topic.
All right.
Mr. Peterson, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Representative Severson, that's coming up in the Veterans Committee on Friday, and I'm a little concerned about that, too. That came out of the Veterans Committee. It didn't come through this Finance Division.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's something we should probably have been looking at because it does take out of our transit monies.
It didn't.
And I think there's a bill up again in the Finance Division. Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Severson, for bringing this up. I think the number, there is a problem in areas like regions like St. Cloud, but I think the number was $269,000, and that was the amount I believe Met Council was reimbursed for its cost for providing the free rides. Well, we need to clarify this because you're right, Mr. Tripp up in your area has pointed out the losses that your regional transit system is suffering as a result.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. I don't have the numbers right offhand. That's probably correct, but I just kind of got sidetracked by this. I thought it was 2 point. No?
Mr. Chair,
Captain Hobart.
It's my understanding that council didn't get any reimbursement for this program either. But Judd's in the audience. He can speak on the record.
We can wait.
It's up to you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newton has a comment, too.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the outstate people had indicated that they could absorb this cost when we introduced the bill, that they thought it would be as like a space available kind of thing. And the numbers that I saw, I think I received the same letter that you did, Representative Severson, was something like 26,000 rides provided in the St. Cloud area. But we don't know how many of those were over and above what they were providing before to service members. So how many new rides were created and how many of those were without fee? So I'll be presenting the bill, a minor modification to the bill on Friday at the Veterans Committee, and we can go over it then. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Peterson, excuse me. Ms. Zuers had a comment.
Mr. Chair and members, in 2009 laws, Chapter 36, under the Met Council section. What we did is we had a rider under bus transit for services for disabled veterans, and it was for $129,000 for fiscal year 10 and $140,000 for fiscal year 11. And we did not increase their appropriation based on that rider.
And a rider is a rider on the bill, not the physical rider. But is Mr. Tripp in the audience? Dave is here.
I apologize, Mr. Chair.
No, I think it's good to bring it up because it's going to come up on Friday, Representative Severson. Dave Tripp is not in the audience, I don't think.
No, he's not.
Any further comment? Let's see. Mr. Peterson. Continue. We'll get to you, Representative Reinhardt, soon to get this.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, and the additional item under that miscellaneous fund transfers category is the State Airports Fund. And what we're recommending there is a reduction in the operating appropriation for the Aeronautics Office. It's not a reduction to the grants. And we're asking for $140,000 reduction in fiscal year 10 and $212,000 in fiscal year 11. My understanding is that the $140,000 in fiscal year 10 is a projected surplus in their operating appropriation for fiscal year 10. And the impact of the fiscal year 11 reduction is that they had a plan to backfill for some longtime employees in their navigation aids area that they are expecting to retire soon, and so they want to do some knowledge transfer while they were still on staff, and now they're not going to be able to follow that plan. So that's the impact of that reduction.
Representative Reinhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Peterson, does the funding for the Aeronautics Office, is that also derived from the airport user fees, or where does that originate? No. My concern, Mr. Chair, and I know we've dealt with it in committee before, but you know, a large part of the airport fund is funded by user fees, and it tends to disappear periodically back into the general fund, and that's not a good practice.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Reinhardt, all the revenue in the State Airports Fund comes from airplane user fees, airline flight property taxes, airplane registration fees, and aviation fuel taxes.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Peterson, to be clear, the transfer then out of the Office of Aeronautics back into the general fund is a transfer of user fees from the airport fund back to the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryant, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Beard, I presume you'd have a question.
Maybe comments more than questions, but it appeared that Representative Holberg was going to have a question or comment before I jump on it.
Oh, I didn't.
But I'm happy to do that if you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess this whole airports fund, I know that we're into them for $15 million, but historically, we didn't do all the general fund bonding that's being proposed, so, I mean, at some point, this committee should decide, are we going to do this with general fund bonding and say, we don't owe you $15 million anymore because we have $20 million in the bonding bill to do the things that we would have done had you had the 15, I mean, with all due respect to the pilots, you can't have it both ways. You can't keep coming in and asking for general fund bonding, saying you took our $15 million, and then the next day saying, well, you still owe us $15 million. So, I mean, I know it's tough times, but at one point or another, they got to decide, are they going to move to try and get in the bonding bill year after year, or go back to the way it used to be when those projects are funded with their special revenue source.
Representative Severson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg, I think to that issue, I think we had $3 million that was taken out of that $15 million that was credited to a hangar that was up in...
Two airports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I apologize. So we're kind of ratcheting down the $15 million against the bonding. We're just trying to dedicate those to aviation projects that are legitimate aviation projects. And I would agree with you that if there are... But I don't think we have had... Other than that one and some other, the airport, I think, are continually going against that $15 million debit. We're trying to isolate those and say, this is the $15 million taken out, so let's... Does that make sense? That we're...
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, yeah, it's... when this first started back in 2003, when Representative Leader and I were sitting in the corner of the table over there when this first happened, we thought, holy cow, what's going on? And there was $15 million taken, and we had $15 million put back, ostensibly, that when we got into the crisis last year, somebody with a long memory said, say, we just put that $15 million back, let's go get it again. So once again, there was legislation, I believe it's actually in statute, that after the school shift is paid and local government aid is restored, the third payment to be made is to put the money back from the general fund, because this is entirely user fees collected only for one department in transportation that is to be spent specifically on the activity that generates the fees. It seems fair enough to all of us. We did have, although it's nowhere in statute, it's sort of just chatter amongst those of us that actually pay a lot of attention to this, that last year in the bonding bill there were two airport projects that could have come from that money through aeronautics, totaling about $3.2 million, I believe, for, is it Big Fork and Luverne, and I think there was one other project that we just kind of tacitly agreed among ourselves, well, we'd count that against the $15 million. So if the number kind of in my mind is 11.8 at the moment, but now it looks like we're taking another, what, Mr. Peterson? 352 we have to add back to that? Is that what you're telling me here? And Mr. Chairman, we'll be revisiting this issue again, I think, in a couple weeks. I think Representative Dill has another bill about paying the money back and things like that. But
I think that's this coming Thursday.
Is it?
Right.
Oh, sooner than I thought. Okay. So, yes, Representative Holberg, there have historically been projects that do not qualify for the airport fund, like the big project at the Duluth Airport, for instance, that they've come and asked the state taxpayers to bond for. There have been projects, however, that would have normally fit into the $15 million pot that we did bond for with kind of just an understanding that we would deduct that from the balance due.
And
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I'd like to see that deduction in statute then.
Any further comment?
See how we draft that bill, Mr. Chairman, but we can try, I suppose.
Not. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving on to the hazmat registration program repeal, this is another area where we have an accompanying policy initiative to eliminate the state registration program for hazardous materials haulers, and we're asking for that program to be eliminated because it duplicates a federal program, and so we're just trying to eliminate the duplication. And so what you see here is elimination of the revenue as well as the spending that went along with that.
Mr. Peterson, didn't we just pass that bill?
Yes, sir.
Last session, or was that vetoed? We had it in Representative Hornstein. It was in your bill? So that was vetoed, or is it passed?
Mr. Chair? It's still in the bill, but I think there's Ms. Zewers had mentioned that will that amount of money will not be carried over, I imagine. Is that correct for that?
Ms. Zewers?
Mr. Chair and members, the as in the governor's supplemental budget, there would be a, with the repeal, there would be a decrease in revenue of about $150,000 per year to the general fund and about $80,000 per year to the trunk highway fund. In order to offset the general fund, the fewer receipts that we would get to the general fund, the $150,000, we would have to have some sort of a decrease in expenditures somewhere within the budget. And I think the governor's proposed $125,000 from, is it the freight area? I think.
Mr. Peters? So. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Evers, that's correct. Yes, from our freight office.
Okay. Basically, it was because of duplication.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's the reason we've asked to eliminate this program. Yeah. It's a redundant registration. And finally, the urban partnership reduction. Most of you are familiar with our urban partnership agreement project that implemented a MinPass lane on 35W south of downtown Minneapolis, as well as some improvements in transit facilities in downtown Minneapolis and transit services in that corridor as well. And part of that project included a telecommuting project, which part of our proposal was to increase telecommuting by workers in that corridor. And my understanding is that we have exceeded our commitments to the federal government on that aspect of our program. And although we did have plans for spending this $84,000, we can reduce the appropriation for that program without endangering our commitment to FHWA or our ability to receive all the federal money that we were expecting.
Any questions on the urban partnership? You have one item left, Mr. Peterson.
This just refers to the unallotment ratification from the general fund. As you can see on the expenditure side, it zeros for 10 and 11 and 24,000 in the out years.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to back up to the emergency relief account, the $5 million. How will MnDOT assure that the expenditures in that category are actually constitutional? In other words, how do we know MnDOT trucks won't be picking up trees that have fallen in parks? I'm assuming that because it comes from constitutionally dedicated funding sources, that you're going to have to be pretty narrow in your deployment of MnDOT resources in these emergency situations.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, you know, I don't think the creation of this fund will affect our response to these emergencies. I mean, anytime our trucks, for example, respond to, like, say, a tornado and trees are down on the streets, I mean, the same situation exists. We're expending constitutionally dedicated funds to respond. You know, I've not been on site in those instances, but our maintenance folks, for example, are pretty conscientious about, you know, restricting our activities to the trunk highway system. I don't know that if there's a need that's not directly on the trunk highway system that they wouldn't respond to that, but they are pretty conscientious about that.
Representative Hooper.
And Mr. Chair, just for the record, so will you have a written policy that will make sure that MnDOT resources are only used for constitutionally allowed purposes in these situations?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, that's a policy that we operate under every day. I mean, we have the opportunity to do work off the trunk highway system every day, and sometimes the distinction is not as clear as we'd like it to be. So I don't know that the creation of this fund requires some additional verification or additional policy. I mean, we're always spending trunk highway funds. Typically, when we respond to any emergency currently, it won't change under this approach.
Well, and Mr. Chair, it's my understanding in the past that maybe you've been too generous in your resources, and some of the behavior actions of MnDOT would be beyond the scope of what the constitutionally allowed purposes of these funds are. That's a concern, and it doesn't really seem like it's a concern of yours.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, I would not characterize my, that it was not be a concern of mine. I wouldn't characterize my attitude that way at all. We are always concerned that we restrict our activities to those constitutionally allowable expenditures. But again, emergency situations, I don't know what our folks do in response to that. My own experience with our maintenance folks, though, leads me to believe that they are very conscientious about maintaining, restricting their activities to those things for which the money is eligible to be spent. If you have information to the contrary, I'd be happy to sit down and review it with you.
All right, thank you.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Peterson, under this unallotment ratification, talks about transit improvement, rail service. So there's a little item in there about Roosevelt Tower. I'm curious, what is Roosevelt Tower?
We have a tower that the department owns. It's up, I think, near International Falls that gathers and transmits weather information. And I think the $9,000 constitutes 1 year's operating appropriation for operating that tower, and we typically don't spend it all. And so we don't anticipate this will affect our ability to operate that tower successfully. Okay.
Any further questions? Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I was deliberating whether to go to this or not, but I have to point out the percentage of the cut that's coming from non-metro transit when we look at the overall numbers. If we look at 12 and 13, for example, 546,000, and I look at the bottom line here, it just seems like metro transit is taking a significant amount, non-metro, excuse me, significant share. And I just wondering if you could explain the department's thinking when we look at, of the cuts overall.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow, overall, as I alluded to earlier, the Greater Minnesota Transit Grant Program is by far the largest amount of general fund appropriation that the department receives. So we have few options when it comes to making reductions in our general fund spending. My understanding that the amounts represented here are about 3% of the ongoing operating commitments in these areas. And it's also my understanding that what's the recommendation is for Greater Minnesota, or excuse me, Metropolitan Transit is roughly in that same neighborhood. But I won't speak to that. I'll let someone from that council speak to that.
Any further questions, Mr. Peterson? Mr. Peterson, would you just want to comment on, we had some questions about the legislative auditor's report about coding. I think that was all cleared up, and maybe you want to comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, I would love to comment on that, although I'm not terribly familiar with the details, so I'd like to ask our the person who compiles our financial reports for us to come down and maybe speak to those issues. My understanding is we have responded to all those concerns and made corrections in our financial reporting. But
that would be fine if you would. You have in your packet a letter to that effect, I think. And just so that we can bring it before the committee, I think it'd be...
Sure.
It's been resolved, but I just thought we should discuss it.
Sure, Mr. Chairman.
Would you identify yourself for the committee, please?
Yes, my name is Jerry Wood, and I'm the accounting director for MnDOT.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The question basically resolved around the issue of what the legislative auditor's report, pretty much as I understand it, was basically in coding where it showed their assets were probably higher than in 1 year than they were. It was nobody absconding with money, but it was just a bookkeeping error.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. What had happened was some coding was missed, and then the subsequent year, fiscal 9, we discovered that and then corrected the problem at that point.
I was just kind of curious, in your coding, you don't have the old type bookkeeping machines anymore. You have to worry about only so many codes, do you? Or how come that happened?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's true.
But basically, was that the problem, you mean?
The problem was that some coding was missed. It was a field was not filled out properly. And like I said, the following year, the problem was resolved.
It was resolved.
And we went back and did the correction. Yeah. So.
Any questions on that issue as you looked at it? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions for Mr. Peterson or comments? If not, we do have a meeting next Thursday, and we haven't had any bills to come up yet, so we'll have a few bills on next next Thursday's meeting. If no further questions, the meeting is adjourned. Oh, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, is that because the Met Council? I guess that's because the Met Council won't have any cuts, so go home.
We're great. We're cool.
I just listened to these guys this morning. I thought it was good.
You did.
Well, welcome to the committee. Wow.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetton. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you again today, Mr. Chair. I know we had a lively discussion this morning over with the Legislative Advisory Commission, so looking forward to this one as well. We are here to talk about the governor's recommendations as far as our budget, but I would be happy to speak to the disabled veterans piece. I know it sounds like Ms. Zuer's covered it, but the $129,000 fiscal note that accompanied that that piece was absorbed by the council. There wasn't a reimbursement in place, and I know Representative Newton has a bill, a clarification bill for that Friday morning, and the council is supportive of the clarification that he's seeking for that. We think it's a great program, and it is a cost to the transit system, but we also believe it's by far the right thing to do for those veterans. So we stand there with your Representative Newton and appreciate the support of the body for that. With me is Wes Koistra. Wes is our CFO, and he will go through our presentation. When we were here before the committee a couple weeks ago, we talked about the 3% holdback. This will go into just a little bit more detail for you, and then we'll be happy to take any questions. So with that, I can turn it over to Ms. Koistra.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we provided a handout, but I think what we'll do is just go off of the budget page that's in front of you for simplicity and maybe for the sake of your time. Our reductions are fairly straightforward, and there's just and there are a couple of them. The first one is the 3% reduction. And as Mr. Shetman said, when we went over our budget overview at a previous committee, we assumed this reduction in that overview, so the impacts were talked about in the context of our overall budget at that time. The second item is the unallotment ratification, and we of course assumed the actual unallotment that occurred in 10 and 11, and we did not assume the unallotment in the 12 and 13, but it has an impact of $1.6 million a year. I would remind the committee that in the solution that was reached last year in conference committee, we had the option to use council levies for community development to fill in gaps in our funding. And we were asked to avoid fare increases and service reductions, and we were also asked to avoid the use of that flexibility. And we have done that to a great extent. I believe we're only budgeted to use about $3.4 million of the community levies. So to the extent that either MVEST doesn't perform according to forecast, or there's other changes in the state budget, that forces us in the near term into the levy use. But up to now, I think we've been pretty successful in honoring the conference committee's wishes that we avoid the use of that flexibility. So that's still there for us, but we view that as a last resort as we're going forward.
And Mr. Chair, just to add to that authority expires at the end of 2011
calendar?
Yep.
Or fiscal
calendar year? Yeah. We believe it's the calendar year.
We don't have that other budget sheet to which you're referring. We just have this sheet, Mr. Koistra. Well, you're working off the one we had for the supplemental, yeah.
Yeah.
That was only the one list, one item.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for the committee? Not, that concludes your testimony.
That's, Mr. Chair, members, that really is it.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question. You said that it's something expires at the end of 2011. What exactly is that? Was that the levy authority? Is that what you're talking about?
Mr. Chair and members, what expires is the ability for the council to use our livable communities levy. We worked with the conference committee last year and received the flexibility of those levies in order to make up some of the reductions that we had in our budget. Last session, we had a $62.4 million shortfall, and in order to close that gap, we used some stimulus money. We also were looking to use our livable communities levies, and one of the things that came out of the conference committee was that at all costs, we wanted to avoid another fare increase or service cuts. And I think you know, that was rightfully so. The transit system had just taken an across-the-board fare increase of October that previous year. So so it was agreed to, and we were able to avoid those service cuts and route reductions. And now we're before you with the new round of the budget discussions.
And what is the average fare right now?
The average fare, depending on if it's an express fare or a local route fare, and I should defer here to Representative Hornstein, who is riding every day so far this session, but it's $1.75 and up to $3 for an express route.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein?
Yes, and slightly higher in rush hour, though.
Yeah.
it is. Mr. Chair, just real quickly, Mr. Chetnan, so in terms of these, and I very much appreciate your efforts at, you know, keeping the lid on fares and service reductions, but effectively what would this mean for the council to have this 3% cut? Like what would be affected? What programs or services would be affected?
Mr. Chetnan or Mr. Pfister?
Mr. Chair, I have my thoughts, but I'll turn it over to our finance guy, who's probably better well-spoken than I am.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, when we presented on our budget status and assumed these figures, one of the results that we talked about was that we are living, we have seen some improvement in the MS forecast, so that's benefited us in a way that we didn't have before to absorb some of these reductions. We're a little concerned about that because the forecast shows MVEST rebounding from its low point, but it also shows that it hasn't hit the low point yet. So we're anticipating a bounce before it hits the ground. But that certainly helped us in this situation. And we are going to be spending on average more money than what we're taking in, but some reductions in some MVEST performance that has occurred recently, better than forecast, has allowed us to reserve some of that money, and some administrative reductions that we took early in anticipation of this has allowed us to do that. So the good news is we think we can sustain ourselves through the out biennium. Perhaps the bad news is we are relying on some one-time money during that period.
Right, and just to add to that, by 2012, the MVEST schedule will have fully phased in, so we won't, I mean, we're seeing some help by getting the phase in of those dollars, and when we get to 2012, we will be at our 36% cap.
Mr. Chair, I want to add, because we talked about fare increases earlier, and for sake of full disclosure, we are assuming in our budget assumption that there would be a fare increase in July of 2011. Now, the reason we assume that is because that's been kind of the pattern of fare increases about every 3 or 4 years, so we felt like that fits within sort of the normal pattern of fare increases rather than what we were facing last year when we were looking at fare increases simply as a budget strategy earlier than what we would typically look at fare increases. So those assumptions in the out biennium do include a 25-cent fare increase.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, some of us here on this committee represent communities that have opt-out providers. What impact do you see this cut passing along to them? How is that going to impact the opt-outs?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morgan, part of our budget plan includes the use of excess reserves, and this is part of the discussion that we're currently having with the opt-outs. At one point, opt-outs had reserve capacity of between, I think, around 50% of annual operating costs to over 200% of annual operating costs. We're having a discussion with the opt-outs right now about what is the right level for reserve capacity. Right now, our budget assumptions assume that that right level is 25%, but I want to be careful in saying that conversation isn't over yet. in comparison, that's for the opt-outs. In comparison, the reserve target for Met Transit is 8.3%. So we are assuming that a smaller organization needs a larger reserve capacity in that figure. But that's a conversation that's going on. So over time, we assume that we're going to be drawing down excess reserves by allocating less of the discretionary portion of the allocation. Opt-outs receive a fixed portion of MBES collections. It's based upon, I believe, 17% of the first 21.5% of the total MBES collections by the state. To the extent that we receive more than that 21%, then that money is allocated across around the region, and what we're trying to do is develop policies to do that equitably. That it's important to have policies to equitably allocate those funds, not only for tough times that we're in right now, so that we're not seeing service reductions in some place and service expansion in another place, but it's also, frankly, important in better times when we can actually expand transit services to make sure that those are targeted to the most sort of powerfully oriented expansions. So those are the discussions that we're having with the opt-outs right now, and those discussions are taking place right now, and they're not completed.
Representative Morgan. Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Quistra, I feel like I just opened a can of worms here in front of the whole committee. That was quite a complex answer. Should one expect that there would be a proportional cut in the opt-outs compared to the Metro Transit, or should one expect that it should be based on efficiency of service and effectiveness of service and riders delivered, cost per rider, and so forth like that?
Mr. Kuster? Mr. Chair, actually all of the above. We're looking at an allocation policy that looks at the performance of the routes. We understand that costs are not going to be equal between urban and opt-out services. We know that it's more expensive to provide the same service in the suburban regions than it is in the urban. We're looking at about what the reserves policy should be. And I think what our goal is, I know that our objective is that for today, in a budget tight time, that no one is required to reduce services, and that's in honor of what was discussed last year as part of the overall budget agreement.
Thank you,
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you know, with the combination of the unallotment and the proposed cuts and the making the unallotment permanent in the out years, I'm assuming that your cut is greater than 3%. Do you know offhand what it is if you combine those two things?
Mm-hmm. Mr.
Quister. Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, there was a 3% reduction to our general fund appropriation. And then there was the unallotment represented about a 2.25% reduction. So in total, it's a 5.25% reduction to our general fund appropriation. Of course, we also have revenues through MVEST, and we have revenues through fares and advertising revenues and other revenues. So for that portion, it's a little over 5% reduction.
And Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Shetton knows this. Do you know, was Greater Minnesota Transit unallotted at the same time Metro Transit was unallotted this fall?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I saw Mike Schadauer here earlier. I believe they were.
Ms. Munyon's here, too. Maybe she.
Corinne.
Ms. Zuers can address that. I believe they were.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, MnDOT did receive some unallotments, and the reductions included 9,000 per year. For Greater Minnesota Transit, yeah. For in unallotments. So the total MnDOT unallotment was around 24,000 per year and 9,000 per year for Greater Minnesota Transit.
And Mr. Chair, and Ms. Zuers, I'm assuming that that's far less than the 2.25%. Of the total budget, the 9,000, is that correct?
Ms. Zuers?
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I'm not sure on that, but I can get back to you.
All right, thank you.
Any further questions? Are you completed, too?
Mr. Chair, we are completed. All of these numbers, again, are subject to change based on what happens with the February forecast, but I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to be back at that point.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir. If no further questions, we will still have a meeting on Thursday, and the meeting is adjourned.